Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
The Tampa Bay Lightning are Stanley Cup champions. And Steve, maybe we can have nice things. They beat the Dallas Stars 2-0 in Game 6 of their Stanley Cup Finals. They win only the third World Championship in Tampa Bay history. Two of them now belong to the Lightning. Victor Hedman wins the Conn Smythe Trophy as the MVP of the tournament. And Steven Stamkos gets his Stanley Cup to punctuate what will likely be a Hall of Fame career for the Lightning captain. We'll break down the Lightning's remarkable run to the Cup, and the Rays opened their first round of the playoffs against the Toronto Blue Jays today at the Trop. We've got Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times to break down all of that. We've got so much to talk about on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Hey, Steve, another new sponsor, and I love this one, literally delicious. Who's got the best party platters in your catering in Tampa Bay? That would be Mr. Empanada.
And you know how I know that? So I hadn't had Mr. Empanada in years. And about 3 weeks ago, maybe four, we all come to Amalie Arena to do the Lightning games, and Fox Sports is doing their post-game shows. So, you know, Rick Peckham and Brian Engblom and all those guys are here for all the games because they sit here, watch the games to go over it, and then they do the post-game show. So about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Chief brings in a whole party platter of Mr. Empanada and was giving them out to everybody. I was like, man, I hadn't had one. And, man, that was dinner that night. I was like, so the next day, everyone's going, hey, Chief, where's the empanadas? When are you bringing them back again?
You get hooked on them. Yeah.
I'd forgotten how good they are.
Here's what you do. You take your favorite foods, right, whatever you like, and you place them inside a pocket of homemade dough that's cooked perfectly until it's golden brown and piping hot. Their empanadas are fresh. It's really a twist on your old favorites. You can order delicious menu items made from scratch, including soups, salads, and Cuban sandwiches, online at MrEmpanada.com, or you can call any of their 7 convenient locations in Tampa Bay. Where Latin food, quality, and service meet, it's Mr. Empanada. Steve, there's only been 3 world titles. The Lightning owned 2 of them. We'll all remember where we were. Of course, you were working the game as a producer of that broadcast. I can only imagine for you, you know, having been through this ride for all these games, what that must have been like to be around Phil and Michigan and all those guys. But I'll tell you what, I had 2 of the most excited little girls, in my house, and I posted something on Twitter about it. This is something that, you know, you never forget, and you enjoy as a family, as a fan base. I know Amalie was crushed with people tonight, which was a little scary. Glad I wasn't there, but that's another story. And, look, this hockey team, you got to go back to last year when they get swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets as the President's Cup winner. And, you know, it kind of drove them. And I'm not sure that anything short of this would have satisfied them. But, man, with a pandemic, with all that they had to endure, this is one of I've always said that I think this is the hardest championship to win, which is the Stanley Cup, and to do it in a bubble, the sacrifice they made over two months away from family and everyone else. I mean, this is maybe one of the greatest championships that we've ever seen here.
You could definitely make a case for that, and you know, look, the Lightning came to the bubble. It was over 2 months ago, July 26th. They flew to Toronto. So it's been 2 months and a handful of days. They came on a mission. And if you watch this team in this playoffs, from the exhibition game against Florida, which happened on July 29th, so we're 2 months ago, they dominated Florida in the exhibition game. And you could just see that they came to the bubble on a mission. And John Cooper talked about in the postgame. They used Virginia as a motivating factor. And if you remember the Virginia Cavaliers, the first number one seed to lose to a 16 seed in the tournament.
Yeah.
And they came back the next year and won it all.
I mean, he had a cap at the podium, Virginia cap. Yeah.
Yep. And so the Lightning last year, you know, had to swallow that, you know, one of the greatest teams ever, if not the greatest regular season team ever. And then they get swept in the first round of the playoffs. And then you come back this year and you struggle at the beginning of the year because you're trying to change the way you play. You catch a hot streak starting right before Christmas is when you started that 23-2-1 run in 26 games and went from a 500 team that was questionable to make the playoffs to one of the top teams in the East. And then you hit a little rough patch. You had some injuries coming. McDonough got hurt. Jan Ruda got hurt. Stamkos was hurt a little bit. You had some injuries coming. You were struggling a little bit. And then the world shuts down, and you hit a pause. And you're the second-best team in the East. You've been all year changing your team to get ready for a playoff run because you're going to not repeat the mistakes of the year before. Now you have to shut it down for 4 months, and then you come back. And you come back to this round-robin tournament, whatever, in this bubble, and your first opponent's the Columbus Blue Jackets.
I mean, you can't write it. I mean, it was serendipitous in a way. And you know, John Cooper said this too. Was it their first game? I'm not sure if it was their first game with the five overtime
game. They had the round-robin game, so they played three round-robin games.
Yeah, they Columbus had three, but I mean, the first Toronto. The series against Columbus.
Yes, game one went to five overtimes.
Five overtimes, a six-hour game, and if they don't win, Cooper says, maybe that creates enough doubt to where they don't have this run to the cup. That's how important. In fact, so many of their games were overtime, and so many of their games decided by one goal.
They played more overtime minutes than any team in history by a long shot. I mean, they had passed it games ago, and they've gone to multiple overtime since. They've played more overtime. They've won so many, you know, one-goal games. The way that they have transitioned from – look, they're known as an offensive finesse team. They still are, although they've sacrificed some of that to become a very good defensive team. And let's not forget, the four teams they played in this tournament, Columbus, Boston, the Islanders, and the Stars. If you look at the goals against this season, four of the top five teams as far as – defense and goals against. They went up against the best defensive teams in hockey and won the cup and never had to go to seven games in any of those series. 5-5, 6-6 were the games. They never lost two games in a row. They're only the second team in Stanley Cup history to not lose two games in a row in a playoff year. The other team, the 0-4 Lightning. Nikolai Hobby-Bulin went 7-0 after a loss. Andre Vasilevsky went 7-0 after a loss in this tournament. This team was on a mission, and yeah, they had, you know, you get some losses along the way and you start to panic a little bit, but they were on a mission, and the way they play coming out of a loss in this tournament has been phenomenal.
Yeah,
it refocuses them or recenters them, or, you know, they start to put an emphasis back on, we're not going to let you score.
Right.
And they shut you down. I mean, this team has shut these teams down. The Pastrnak line did nothing in that series. The first game they did. After that, nothing. Dallas has topped Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, and they're not scoring. Radulov did nothing in this series. Columbus's best line did nothing. The Islander Barzal line, nothing. I mean, they took the top lines of all these teams and shut them down. Took them completely out of the game. While their top line, no team had an answer for. No team had an answer for Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov, and Andre Palat. They were phenomenal in this tournament. And, you know, you mentioned Victor Hedman gets the Conn Smythe Trophy, and well-deserved.
Could have got anybody, yeah.
But if you would have said Braden Point or Nikita Kucherov got it, I wouldn't have made an argument.
Me either.
And that didn't even include Vasilevsky, who had a good tournament, too. And congratulations to him. He's already the Lightning's all-time leader in playoff wins, and he finally gets his first career playoff shutout in the game-deciding game, Game 6, to win the Cup.
That's I said awesome. It at the time. I mean, they scored the one goal early when Braden Point put in his own rebound. And, you know, I just felt like somehow he was going to try to – and it ended up getting another goal later. But it felt like, you know, Vasilevsky was going to make that stand up. Like, sometimes to win a Stanley Cup, maybe you just need to shut the other team out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what they did. They didn't get a lot of shots. I mean, Vasi had help. He made some great saves, you know, and they had to fight off some you know, some power plays and things like this. But it was such a solid win. I think, I don't know if it was Ryan McDonough, one of those guys said, you know, that might have been start to finish the best game we've ever played.
I think it was Hedman. Hedman said it was.
Was it Hedman that said that?
Yeah. And he might be right. I mean, when you start counting the circumstances in game six with the cup on the line, you know, you had just not played your best game in game five, although you had a chance in overtime and were actually dominating overtime.
Yeah.
But lost it in double overtime game five where you could have clinched it to come back and play the game they did. That was, you know, I think, I don't remember who put it on. I saw some, you know, said it was clinical.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they did tonight. That was impressive. Given all the circumstances and everything else, that was impressive. That was a dominating performance in the whole playoffs, really. I mean, this Lightning team was on a mission, and they fulfilled it and with flying colors. I mean, and kudos to John Cooper and his coaching staff, because 2 years ago, you missed the playoffs. Or no, 3 years ago, you missed the playoffs. Could have made a case.
Last year they had to collapse.
Well, yeah. Could have made a case at that point that you could have made a coaching change. You get up 3-2 in the Eastern Conference Finals against Washington in 18, and then you don't score another goal after 30-some seconds into the second period of Game 5 and lose that series. Then you have a phenomenal regular season in, you know, 2018-19 and get swept out of the playoffs. And it would have been – you wouldn't have argued if Julian Breezeball would have made a coaching change.
No.
You wouldn't have made that. You wouldn't have, you know, questioned that. But Julian Breezeball stuck with the plan, stayed with his guy, and look at the results you get. They completely transformed this team. And kudos to Julian Breezeball, too.
Absolutely.
Who trades two number one picks and a former number one pick prospect, Nolan Foote, to get guys like Barclay Goodrow and Blake Coleman. He went all in this year. Last year, he didn't make any moves at the trade deadline. He said, we've got the team to stand pat. And it didn't work in the playoffs. This year, he went all in and found guys that complemented what they needed. They needed guys like Coleman and Goodrow to help on the penalty kill and really anchor that line with Yanni Gourde. I mean, once they got Goodrow and Coleman, and then when they went through training camp again, I think the pause really helped them in this regard. That Coleman and Goodrow got a chance to get to know their teammates for a few months before, granted on Zoom and all that, but... And then you go through a training camp. So you're not just coming in on a trade where, you know, you played a few games, but you're trying to learn systems and all this other stuff and get situated in a new city and this. And they took advantage of that with the pause. But those two pieces, and Bogosian on the back end too, but let's start with Goodrow and Coleman. Those two pieces, once they got them, now all of a sudden you had four pretty consistent, solid lines. You know, now Palat wasn't necessarily on the top line. You would hope Stamkos was up there. And then, you know, where Palat fit in, maybe you had to figure out. But the Gourde, Coleman, Goodrow line is just gnats and pests. And man, you love to throw them out there in their forecheck. The way Nikita Kucherov played in this postseason, that is as driven and motivated as I've seen Nikita ever in his career.
You know, I'm glad you said that. It also was the most emotion I've ever seen him have. And I know he just won a cup, and I'm sure he was overwhelmed. But, you know, too often we, you know, people stereotype Russians as not being very expressive or whatnot. Mm-hmm. He was moved almost to tears. I mean, he was genuinely couldn't believe it. And you're right. They showed the highlights of how many times Nikita Kucherov got knocked down, how many bad hits that he took, collisions. There's no question that those teams were looking for him early and often. And yet he played more of a 200-foot game than I've ever seen him play. You know, you don't have Steven Stamkos, so he knows he has to step up. That line was unbelievable. He made plays that Braden Point finished pretty much the whole tournament long. I mean, it was really inspiring and just really fun to see that other side of Kucherov. Because remember, was it a couple years ago or last year?
Last season. Remember, he got suspended for game three.
He got baited into, because he took some hits and he got baited into a cheap shot.
He was frustrated, and he took it out. And
that cost him.
It absolutely
cost him
did.
Dearly.
I mean, they probably lose that series regardless. That was already down, basically 2-0 at that point.
But you can't be without your best player.
Absolutely. And this, you know, you could tell that's what other teams, they were trying to get him to do that again this year.
Absolutely.
And he had none of it. I mean, to see the way Nikita Kucherov was forechecking this whole tournament, not just a game or two.
Yeah.
The reason that line, nobody could stop them. We know what Braden Point's going to give you. You know what Palat's going to give you. But when Nikita Kucherov is that engaged on the defensive end, whether it's in his own zone or, for the most part, it was in the other team's zone, because every time that line had the puck, it was pretty much in the other team's zone. And the way they would forecheck when they didn't have the puck, incredible. And that, you know, now you're seeing, you hope with Nikita, that's a maturity that now his game's come complete. Alex Ovechkin for years was, you know, okay, he can shoot the puck.
Oh, yeah, he was
and
Barry, greatest player to never win a Stanley Cup.
Sure, but Barry Trotz taught him how to play defense but still be effective offensively.
Right.
And that's what's made Alex Ovechkin so good, and he ended up winning a cup with that, is that he's learned how to also play defense. And it doesn't mean you're sitting back in your zone the whole time. It's forechecking and forcing the puck so that they're turning it over to you in their zone. And you know, Ovechkin's really good at it. He's become really good at it. He wasn't early in his career. Well, Nikita Kucherov is as skilled offensively as any player in hockey. Maybe not the best shot, but his creativity and his skill level and you know, how he sets up other players is incredible. But if you don't have the puck, if you're always chasing it back the other end because you're not doing the work to when you don't have the puck, it becomes a problem. He put in the work, and it proved it. And that emotion from him was validation of all that he put into it. And kudos to him.
It was so cool. It was so cool. And he took an awful lot of abuse. They showed sort of a montage beginning with the Columbus series of, you know, players basically taking a run at him, for lack of a better term. And he took all of it without retaliating. And you know, his teammates stuck up for him when they could. He was great. And, I mean, there was just across the board, obviously, a lot of great performances. And this team, you know, was together for so long. They it's a team that, you can't always say this, but appears to really enjoy each other's company, being that they got thrown together. But
a big group of this team has been together for many years now.
That's right.
I mean, you know, yeah, you add some pieces every year, and you get some new young guys that come up as well. And they're going to have some tough decisions to make this offseason. The salary cap's going to be and they've got to sign Tony Cirelli, Eric Chernak, and Mikhail Sergachev, all restricted free agents. So there's going to be some changes and turnover on this roster, and it's going to happen quick because free agency starts a week from Friday.
But the core is still the core.
Yes.
And I don't know what Stamkos's fate is going to be, but, you know, this may not be a one-and-done situation. I mean, this is a hockey team now that has climbed the mountain, right? They've gotten the Holy Grail, and now that they know they can do it, now that they know how to do it, you know, the proverbial cliche, whatever, monkey is sort of off their back now.
If they're willing to keep putting in that work, absolutely.
That's the key.
You know, Hedman's locked up, McDonough's locked up, Stamkos is locked up, Kucherov's locked up.
Yeah.
You know, Tyler Johnson, Palat are locked up. Kalorn is under contract, but most likely will get moved this offseason because he now has he goes from a no-trader clause to a modified no-trade clause. He has a list of teams he can submit that he won't be traded to. But so he may be one that ends up going salary cap wise, but you know, then you've got, you know, young guys like Sorelli's a restricted free agent and Sergachev and Chernak. And then, you know, you start going through, but Coleman and Goodrow are under contract for another year. This core, look, we thought back in 15 that they would be back to the Stanley Cup a lot sooner than this. I mean, in 15, they made the cup a little too early.
Probably.
I mean, you know, no one was expecting it at that point. They kind of were a little ahead of schedule for the core group that they had coming up, and kudos to them. And you know, at the time when they lost to Chicago, who won their third championship in like 6 years or whatever it was like, you know, Chicago won the championship, but the Lightning are going to be back a lot. I mean, and they made the conference finals four times in the last 6 years, but this was only their second Stanley Cup, and this time they win it. But they still have a core that they can continue to win with going forward. Now, like I said, they're going to have some tough decisions, and the roster will look a little bit different next year. But if they're willing to put in the work and stay committed to playing the type of hockey they played in this tournament, they'll be fine.
Well, I guess the tentative plan is it Wednesday, the boat parade? Is that right?
So, yeah. So Wednesday is going to be the public celebrations for the team. The team will get back later today. There's going to be a private ceremony. at Amalie Arena for family and that
yeah.
that they're going to do. But the public celebrations will be Wednesday. There'll be a boat parade, the Hillsborough River and all that downtown. They asking you to, you know, space out and socially distance along the river to watch the boat parade.
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen Amalie, I'm skeptical.
So that's at 5 o'clock on Wednesday. Then the players will grab a bite to eat. They're going to then take some trolleys up to Raymond James Stadium, which is where the public, the celebration and the stage and the players will speak and do all that stuff.
How about
that's going to happen at Raymond James Stadium. 7:30 on Wednesday night. Doors will open at 6:30. The parking opens at 5:30. It's free, but you do have to have a ticket to get in. And social distancing will be in effect and seating in pods and keeping everyone apart from each other. So they're not going to fill the stadium.
Right.
So tickets, you can get them through Ticketmaster. They become available today at 1 o'clock. I would encourage you to probably go early or at 1 o'clock to try to get tickets through Ticketmaster. But for the public celebration at Raymond James Stadium, Wednesday night, like I said, doors open at 6:30. I think the parking opens at 5:30. The event's supposed to schedule to start at about 7:30 or so. And that's where the whole team will be there, the stage, and it'll be at Raymond James Stadium, so it'll be outdoors and properly social distanced.
And I'm guessing that they'll probably get about 25,000 in there comfortably, right?
I have no idea what the limit or how many tickets they're issuing and you know how they're doing that. I do not know the numbers, so that's why I would say get your tickets as soon as you can through Ticketmaster.
It's interesting, the one trophy you know during a COVID era that you want to touch, share, and drink out of.
Oh, they were doing that tonight, though, but they're all in the bubble together.
And,
so.
And they did it. And you know, I mean, you sit there and you go, ooh, that's not the optics everybody's. Then you go, they've all been tested.
Nine weeks of testing, and there's been no positive
with
tests.
Zero
in the
positive tests. So indeed, they were able to, you know, do anything they wanted without a fear of contracting a major virus anyway. But
and before we get back to kudos to the NHL.
Oh, they pulled this off beautifully.
What a wonderful job the NHL did putting this tournament on.
Totally agree.
You know, it was everything perfect and ideal? No. But they pulled it off. No COVID test in the bubble for 9 weeks that they've been up there. The hockey was competitive.
Very.
I mean, yes, we miss the fans, and they wish the fans could be there. But I don't think the play suffered because of it. The players, the cup was on the line, and they were going for it.
Yeah.
I thought the visuals on television were great. I thought all the stuff they did in the arena and the music with the local teams, and based on if you were the home team, it was your warm-up music. And everything they did I thought was wonderful. And you know, they did a great – look, you're seeing baseball go into a bubble because it's worked in the NBA and NHL.
That's
baseball's
correct.
Doing it in the post. NFL may do the same thing come January for the playoffs.
Oh, I think they will. I got news for you. I think the playoffs, at least after the first round, maybe even all of them, are going to be played, you know, probably. And I don't know that it'll be away from – I guess it's, you know, you're kind of saying, well, you're going to leave Raymond James Stadium, and I'm not sure about that. But I think they'll learn a lot of lessons.
Well,
it may not
be a bubble where, you know, all the teams are together.
Right.
But they can put teams in bubbles where they're in hotels and not.
Absolutely.
You may travel to, you know, whatever city that the game's at, but you're basically just moving your bubble around and no interaction with outside people. I mean, they can do that in ways, too.
They're kind of doing it now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really are.
Yeah. I mean, once they start the playoffs, they don't want anything to roadblock. That's why baseball's doing
contact,
what they're doing.
Right.
Is that, you know, once we start these playoffs, we don't, you know, it's one thing in the regular season that the Marlins had a bunch of COVID cases and we had to cancel some games and the Cardinals and that. And, you know, that's one thing. But once we get to the playoffs, we're not having this. Once the playoffs start, we have to finish. And we saw what baseball and the NBA did, or hockey in the NBA did. And they both have done a great job. And so baseball's following that model, and football probably will too.
Man, it's incredible, but this season, this 2019/20 season actually began almost a year ago.
Well, the first preseason games were like 10, 12 days ago, a year ago. Opening night would have been coming up soon a year ago.
Right.
It started in October, but yeah, I mean, it's been over a year. I mean, training camps usually open a week or two after Labor Day. The rookies usually come in and the prospects right after Labor Day. for most hockey teams, and then the veterans follow. And you know, mid September you're playing exhibition games, so this went more than a year this season.
So, did you agree with you know, who won the most valuable player?
I can't argue against Hedman, but I think Braden Point was the most valuable player.
That's who I turned to my wife and said, I think this will be Braden Point. I wasn't,
and I thought with the game winning goal tonight, that would have sealed it.
That sealed it, right? And I was actually fine with it. I mean, I really like Victor Hedman. I've liked him. I mean, when we were doing radio, yeah, as you recall, mm-hmm, he was one of the first Lightning players that came in studio, and I think he was all of about 20 years old. And you know, couldn't have been nicer, but mm-hmm, but I understand for all he does why Victor Hedman, and the fact that he almost set an NHL mm-hmm record for.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and if you would have said Kucherov got the award, I would have not.
I'd have been fine
either
with that too.
I mean, yeah, those three. Look, there were so many players that had good play: Andre Palat and Blake Coleman and Yanni Gord,
right?
And you know, I mean, there were so many players that Ryan McDonagh was so solid.
Terrific.
This whole tournament. I mean, he doesn't mm-hmm get the points offensively because he's not playing on the power play in that, but he was so solid throughout this tournament. You know, Mikhail Sergachev played very well. A few mistakes here and there, but he played very well in this tournament. I mean, you don't dominate through the tournament the way they did. And that, you know, the thing is as you got through the series, and once you got to the middle part of the series, you know, game three or whatever, you never felt like the Lightning were going to lose the series. Doesn't mean they weren't going to lose games, but they were in control of the games. I mean, even the games they lost, they were in control of, or for good parts of. I mean, that was a dominant playoff performance by them this whole tournament.
Well, and they never lost two in a row. Let's not forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they bounced back every time they did have a loss, which was rare.
Yes, and they bounced back with you know, it was, those were great games. I mean, it wasn't like they skinned by after a loss. They dominated. They took those losses personally, and they came out and proved that we're taking this cup home. I mean, you know, I mean, they were one of the favorites going into the tournament. I think Vegas probably was the biggest favorite, but you know, the Lightning early on showed that, you know, they weren't messing around in this tournament. I mean, you know, what the things that scared you is when Hedman went down in the exhibit or the run of the round robin games, the last round robin game, and you thought he might be lost for the playoffs, or McDonagh's injury.
Sure.
He missed a couple games. I mean, those were the ones when you start going, ooh, that's going to, you know. But as long as they stayed healthy, and for the most part, they did, obviously Stamkos never, you know, played 2 minutes and 47 seconds in the tournament. But as long as everybody else stayed healthy, it was going to be tough to beat them, and they persevered and showed that.
Well, the iconic moment for me, and I know he only played 2 minutes and 47 seconds, and everybody else on that hockey team deserves more credit, but they credited him with what he provided off the ice. But it was Steven Stamkos, you know, with that goal in game four that I'll define, you know, for the shortest period of time he was on the ice, but he made such a huge impact emotionally and, like I said, behind the scenes and things like that. And that was a real moment. As far as tonight happens to be also the anniversary of game 163.
Really?
I
didn't even realize that.
With the Dan Johnson home run and Evan Longoria.
Yeah.
With two home runs. So,
well, that was 162, not 163.
Or 162, I'm sorry. Yeah.
They've had a 163 before, but
they have had the iconic one with
Longoria.
With Dan Johnson and Evan Longoria to get them into the postseason, and that one was about 9 years ago, I want to say.
2011,
To the day. And so this will be a famous day, obviously, and then, you know, just another memorable run.
Just the third championship in Tampa Bay sports history, sports.
That's all it is, and they got two of them. And now your Tampa Bay Rays have a chance. The Bucks are in first place in the NFC South. Some bad news for them, however, before we get to Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times to talk about the Rays' playoff chances. It looks like Chris Godwin's going to miss some time. And when I say some time, I don't have anything, you know, concrete. I'm not sure they do. They're waiting on the MRI to come back on his bad hamstring. But if you consider that they are going to play beginning Sunday two games in 10 days, then...
Or four days, know, really.
Or four days from Sunday, but
yeah.
But yeah, the
from
10
now,
days
yeah.
from Sunday to Sunday, and then and then a couple days later. So, I mean, I don't see a scenario where he's going to be well enough to play Sunday. And if he's not well enough to play Sunday, would you then turn around with no practice, and just glorified walkthroughs, and try to put him out there?
You wait for the three weeks.
Yeah, until sometime after the bye, because you're going to get a mini bye, you know, playing Chicago on Thursday Night Football next week. So, you know, somebody's going to have to, they're going to have to figure some things out. They're going to have some receivers that play better. Tyler Johnson got into the game, but frankly didn't do anything. You can make better use of your tight ends, you know. But it's a shame because, you know, the first week Mike Evans was not feeling well, was not Mike Evans. He gutted it out a little bit, and then Chris Godwin gets a concussion. And then they come back and, you know, they both contributed quite a bit, you know, to the win at Denver. And now Godwin's out again. So the depth is being tested. You know, Scotty Miller, has been playing beat up. I mean, he did a remarkable job, you know, getting down the field and having a big catch for them. But he's got, like, hip injuries and some things that are bothering him too. And then, of course, you know, Justin Evans has been out with a shoulder injury. So suddenly, you know, all these weapons, right, for Tom Brady are starting to dry up a little bit. But fortunately, you know, most of these aren't, you know, they don't appear to be anything like season ending or some guys going on the IR. So they're happy about that. But it is kind of a thing. Speaking of the Bucs, before we go and talk about the Rays playoff game today against Toronto, you see Colin Cowherd all in on the Tampa Bay Bucs to go really far.
Well, and how far do you have to jump to get on that bandwagon?
Well, I don't know, because I don't know if he broke his ankles getting off of it at one point, like I did with the Tampa Bay Rays. But, man, you know, he thinks this is a Super Bowl team. He thinks Tom Brady, you know, chose wisely, all that stuff. I'm not as convinced.
I thought he couldn't play in Bruce Arians' offense. I thought that's what all the national media said.
Yeah, that's what it was until you saw him, you know, start throwing those deep balls like dimes to people. And I thought his arm looked good and live and fresh and all of that. Miss Gronkowski for one. But, yeah, I wouldn't worry about that at least early in the season. Let's see, you know, where they are if this drives, you know, drives deep. But, yeah, it's been interesting, man. It's been quite a night, and it's going to be, you know, quite a time for Tampa Bay sports when you consider really all three teams now have a chance, right?
Well, and the Rays start today. I mean, within a month,
yeah,
we'll know if they're the World Series champions.
That's incredible.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, Mark Tompkin joins us now. And, Mark, let's start. We know we got the big playoff game this afternoon against the Toronto Blue Jays, but just want to look at the, you know, this 60-game sprint, I guess we called it at the beginning of this season. And, I mean, with the way the Rays started, to think that this team was, what, 40-20?
Yeah, 40-20, and I'm not that great at math, but my wife is a first-grade teacher, and I think that comes out to a 108-win season if you projected that out over a full season, which is pretty remarkable when you put it in
that context. That's a meat-loafed season right there.
It is. 108-54, and if you did that, you'd be like, wow, this is one of the greatest teams in a long time. So it was an impressive season, and think about, you know, they started that season, what were they, 5-7? They had an 0-5 road trip, the first road trip of the year,
right?
Winless, you know, at that point, and you know, I mean, I know because I talked to some of them, and the players were getting really frustrated. That, you know, everybody was thinking, what's happening here? They're supposed to have this great season, and here they were at this horrible start. But give them credit to turn that around and finish with 40 wins, and you know, only the Dodgers had more. The Rays with the best record in the American League, And, you know, playing, too, let's, you know, to add to it here, playing a schedule with only East teams. So they didn't get, you know, that usual tour through the the bottom of the Central Division in the AL or the AL West. So definitely a tougher schedule too.
On top of that, you know, everybody was talking about the injuries that the Yankees had, and they did have a few. But my goodness, look what the Rays had to endure, particularly in the pitching.
No doubt, Rick. I mean, at one point, I think there were 11 or 12 pitchers out at different stints. I mean, half of the planned opening day bullpen or more out at one point. Four guys lost for the season from the Rays pitching staff that were supposed to be on the opening day staff. You know, they had three of their starters at different points on the injured list. They had, I think, it ended up being eight or nine relievers. They had their top prospect, Brendan McKay, out for the year. So just an amazing job of the depth that they accumulated and they accrued. I mean, look, I'm not going to supposed to be the expert about this team for the Tampa Bay Times, but I'm not going to tell you. I predicted John Curtis and Aaron Sleager's pitching key innings for the Rays as they clinched a playoff spot, and Ryan Sheriff getting a couple saves and a whole bunch of things. We could go on with a long list here. Josh Fleming going 5-0. So there's a whole bunch of things that I don't think anybody, even the Rays people, would admit to expecting to happen.
Yeah, no doubt. And they lost some position players as well. In fact, you know, some key guys, and two of those, Yandy Diaz and G-Man Choi, what's going to be their status for the postseason?
There's a chance they could play today. I mean, that was going to come right down to the last minute on the rosters, which were due at 10 a.m. on Tuesday. And, you know, they worked out Monday. They went through a normal workout, and they did a live batting practice session after that, facing Honeywell and Alvarado and Sean Gilmartin. And, you know, everyone's saying they did well. The question's going to be, you know, how does this fit? What are they limited to do? Are they limited to playing the field? Are they limited to DHing? Can they also play the field? And if they both are limited just to DHing, I'm not sure it makes sense to have them both on the roster. The Blue Jays, in a little bit of a surprise, are starting a right-hander, Matt Shoemaker, rather than Heejin Ryu, who's their ace, who's a lefty. So, you know, maybe you keep G-Man on and keep Yandy off. And the roster's only for this series. I mean, if they win, if they're fortunate enough to go on to the next round, they get to set a new roster. So, you know, it's not like this is a binding thing. It's just for these three games.
You know, there are so many great performances, not just by the pitchers, and we can talk about all the different guys that had saves on this team. But the one constant was a guy that you presented, the baseball writers, the award for the most valuable player, in Brandon Lau. Boy, that guy, he had very few stretches where he wasn't hot, but he put together some numbers. If you translate that over 162 games, that's a pretty good year too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think he'd be in the 45 home run category or something like that, and close to 100 RBI. So, look, Brandon Lau is a player that, you know, to the Rays' credit, they believed in. They drafted him after he broke his leg in a college tournament right before the draft. They promoted him at the end of the 2018 season. He started out 0-for-18 or 0-for-19. Up in early August, ended up with some okay numbers, and they turned around and gave him a $25 million contract the next spring with another $24 million in options, so basically $49, $50 million. Then he went out and had a great first half last year, got hurt right in early July. Remember, he got named to the All-Star team, couldn't play, and then really didn't come back to the last week of the season. And then this year, obviously, only a 60-game season. So there's going to be a time, maybe it's going to be 2021 or 2022, where Brandon Lau is going to get to play a full season unencumbered by pandemic type things and you know, in theory healthy, and it'd be really curious to see what he does then, because he's not a big man, Rick, and he's got a unique batting style, and his basic premise is simply hit the ball as hard as he can. He tries to hit it through the wall, not over the wall. He tries to hit it through the wall. And it sounds silly, but you think about it, it kind of makes sense. And you know, he's an exit velocity guy. He trains himself to hit the ball really hard, and he manages to do it really well.
He's been great. And, of course, you know, getting the best record in the American League is no small feat. Winning the American League East is something. This is only, the third time they've done this. It's incredible that they were able to put this together. But they draw the Toronto Blue Jays, and, you know, it could have been the Yankees, I suppose. But it is the Blue Jays. And is this a good draw or a bad draw for them? Because if you look at the series, and they won the series, I think 6-4, but in reading your column, Mark, the Blue Jays outscored them. They out-homered them. They even had a better ERA. And there's a few guys that are pretty comfortable hitting at the trap.
No doubt about it, Rick. But I do think that of the possibilities – which at the time they were presented or the way it looked, you know, those last couple of days, right. It was either going to be Blue Jays or Yankees, mm-hmm. or it was going to be the Central Division team that was the wild card of the three, which would have meant either Indians, Twins, or White Sox, and ended up being the White Sox. But
right.
I think there's a certain benefit in familiarity. Now, you know, maybe it works both ways, but because of the schedule, the Rays haven't seen any of the Central Division teams all year. I mean, they literally saw the Twins in spring training four times, but they haven't seen
That's
the White
right.
Sox or Indians in over a year. So, and again, it works both ways, but, you know, the Rays are such a, you know, they're such a pitching-oriented team, so that could be to their advantage. But for their hitters, because they're, you know, their hitting isn't as good, I think putting them in a situation of facing guys they hadn't seen all year would have been a distinct disadvantage, especially for some of their newer players. Renfro coming over from the National League, Tsutsugo coming over from Japan, Margot coming over right. from the National League. I mean, those guys may have literally been facing guys for the very first time ever in their careers in the playoffs. So I think it's to the Rays' benefit it was a familiar opponent. But you're right, the Blue Jays played them well. 6-4 in the series, the Rays won it. Eight of those games decided by one or two runs, though, four of those games in extra innings. So very closely matched. And talking to Bo Bichette today, the Lakewood High kid, who is a key part of that, you know, Blue Jays kind of kiddie core, their young players that are going to be a part of their future. And one of the guys whose dad played in the big league, which is a unique thing. They have three sons of big leaguers with Biggio and Guerrero also on the big league team, but they are definitely confident. Someone asked him on the Zoom call, what percent of intimidation, you know, how intimidated were they by playing the Rays at home and the Rays being the best record? He's at 0% intimidated. So I think that, and look, you know what? Good for him. That cockiness carries those guys. And,
yeah.
You know, you've been in the arena at a higher level than I have, but at any level of sports, you know, when you play it, if you're good, you're usually good because you're a little cocky, and usually a little cocky because you're good, and it goes together.
I watch Bo Bichette and the way he swings the bat, and there's no timidness in him at all at the plate. He does not get cheated. And playing, no, look, he's coming home, right? I mean, there's one guy that should be comfortable in St. Petersburg.
Exactly, yeah. And he, you know, there's going to be a select limited number of family members are going to be allowed to go to these games as part of the agreement with the union that MLB made. And I would assume some of his family will be amongst them. And, you know, it's not the same. It won't be the same. We're going to hear about it. You know, some of the Rays were talking about it today. Bichette was talking about it today. It's not going to be the same postseason experience as you know, see on TV in his case, or you live through as the Rays did with those two incredibly electric home games last year against the Astros. But it's, you know, this is how it's going to be, and they're going to make the best of it. You know, it's not, there's no introduction today. There's no, very little pomp, very little circumstance. They didn't even paint a logo on the field. So it's going to be a very different postseason.
Let me ask you this, Mark. You know, you wrote a story about Kevin Cash and the relationship he's had with Charlie Montoyo, of course, was with him on the bench for years. But it does go deeper than baseball. Explain.
Yeah, I mean, these are just two guys that, you know, they kind of, it was a, you know, they weren't like lifelong friends. I mean, they became friends because of their job situations. And Kevin Cash, you know, talked to Charlie Montoyo and hired him, you know, as the third base coach when Kevin Cash got the job. But they really grew close, and you know, they really became a sounding board for each other. And Kevin Cash grew to really respect the path Charlie Montoyo took. The guy spent, think about this, Charlie Montoyo spent 18 years managing in the minors before he got a chance to manage in the big leagues. Kevin Cash spent 0 days managing in the minors before he got a chance to manage in the big leagues. And, you know, they both learned a lot from each other, respect for each other. And, you know, as a man, as a family guy, and as a leader of, you know, men in a clubhouse. So I think they really developed a bond. And you know, the other night when the Blue Jays clinched, Cash said he FaceTimed him at 1:30 in the morning to talk to Charlie about it. I thought, that's pretty funny. I mean, heck, I don't FaceTime you, Rick, not even at 1:30 in the afternoon, much less 1:30 in the morning. So good for them.
Well, you know, I'm usually up, especially if the Lightning are playing, but that's another story. Yeah, Montoyo is kind of the Bruce Arians of Major League Baseball right now, waited that long to become a manager.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, obviously he's done very well. I'm talking to the Rays players who were with him, you know, Kiermaier in the minor leagues and some of the other guys who were here when Charlie was the bench coach and the third base coach and then the bench coach. You know, they really just appreciate him. And Joey Wendell, I think, was the one who told me that somebody said, if you don't like Charlie Montoyo, it's your fault. It's a pretty good way to put it. So
it's a nice,
he's just one of those guys. And I talked to Mitch Lukovics, who was, you know, the Rays longtime farm director, who actually hired Charlie way back in October of 1996. And, you know, he said, you know, they thought he was going to be a good guy for them then. And then it would obviously, you know, exceeded all expectations managing, like I said, for 18 years for them. And then 4 years as a major league coach and now managing the Toronto Blue Jays and in the playoffs in his second season.
Blake Snell gets the baseball first. And, you know, I think him and I think that, you know, obviously Charlie Morton started pitching better at the end. Tyler Glasnow has been extraordinary at times. Pitching is no doubt the strength of this ball club, whether you're talking about those three starters in particular. You know, there are others, obviously, that have played big roles and in the bullpen. But, Mark, I mean, the postseason is different. And, you know, Snell last year came in and contributed, but he wasn't built up innings-wise. In a 2-out-of-3 series, you know, and you wrote about it, if that fails them at all, you know, it can get very tight very fast, right? I mean, they really are counting on the strength of their team being the strength of their team in the postseason.
They are, and you know, I know teams usually go into it that way, Rick, but I think in this case, you know, you can take an optimistic view and say, look, if you go into a playoff series with Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, and Charlie Morton, you're pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
And I agree with that. but if, you know, look, we watched this team every day for the last couple months, and you know, there have been games when Blake Snell has not looked very good, and he gets himself in trouble. He starts falling behind too many guys early on. He's at 50 pitches in the second or third inning.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a playoff game, that's you know, you don't want to take that risk, because that means if you're putting guys on and you're one swing away from suddenly having the other team get two or three or four runs. So
right.
I think that you have to have a little bit of concern if you're the Rays over how Blake Snell's going to pitch. And, you know, as well as Glasnow has looked at times, he also has had some inconsistent outings here. And again, it's a shortened season. I know you have them over the course of a full season when you have 30 starts, but some of these guys made 10, 11 starts, and it's a little more magnified. And Charlie Morton will be the first one to tell you that he hasn't been happy with how he's pitched, and he still doesn't feel – he feels fine physically, but he doesn't feel, you know, kind of that he's all there, he's clicking on the right, you know, cylinders per se, that he's got the breaking ball and the fastball both in the same game. So, you know, you could make a case that all three of these guys come with a little bit of a question mark going into the series, and a series with no margin for error.
And so with Kevin Cash, with this, with the number of guys, I guess here is the mixed blessing to the injuries, right, is that they discovered some people that can play and pitch in different roles. It's the postseason, and you, like you said, you can't allow those big innings. So will he have a faster hook, perhaps, if somebody gets in trouble?
You know, it's interesting, because I was trying to think that through, because the Blue Jays, you know, as I alluded to earlier, made a little bit of a surprise. They went with Shoemaker in the first game and Ryu in the second game. And one of the reasons Charlie Montoyo said, was because this way they knew their bullpen was fresh, because Shoemaker's not going to pitch a complete game. He was out for a month with an injury. He's only pitched once for three innings since he's been back. So,
right.
You know, they know he's not going to go, you know, maybe four or five innings at the most. So, you know, that being said, they have to be, you know, have their bullpen ready. So making it fresh made sense. If you're the Rays, you know, they're talking about cutting the staff down to 12 for this round. They've had been carrying 14, so going with 12 pitchers and 16 position players. So three starters, you've got nine relievers. It sounds like a lot, but they haven't used anybody 3 days in a row all season, so I don't know that they're going to start doing that now. So you have to space it out a little bit. You know, if they get to the seventh or eighth, Anderson's going to be in there at some point, but yeah, if Blake Snell, you know, if you're Kevin Cash and Snell's struggling in the third or fourth inning, you might think, all right, let's go, you know, go to the stable. But if you go to the stable too soon, you might run out of jockeys.
Right. Only so many gates down there for sure. And I love that that has become sort of their mantra with the T-shirts and all of that, because I got a whole stable of guys that can throw 98. There's no doubt they do. You know, this is the COVID world. I don't need to tell you. You've had to cover this team with in a manner that you hope to never have to do again, I'm sure, nor would they want you to. But, you know, having said all that, these guys are now going into a bubble. For all the sacrifices they've made at this point, they're now going into a bubble. They're staying in a hotel, even though they're in their home in Tampa. And, in fact, did I read that in some instances their families will be with them?
Yeah, so Major League Baseball decided that all contending teams had to quarantine the last 7 days of the regular season, or the 7 days going into the playoffs, I guess is the better way to put it. So because the Rays were on the road. How weird is this? Because the Rays were on the road in New York when that 7-day window started. It started last Tuesday, and they were in New York till Wednesday night. So some of the players' families actually had to move into the hotel on Tuesday, even though the players themselves weren't there yet. So the family would get their 7 days in. The players were allowed to go to their homes because they got in at 6 a.m. from New York. They were allowed to go to their homes, get their stuff, and then check into the hotel later that day. But yeah, it's been a really weird system. Basically, they had a quarantine at home, and if they win this first round here and they advance, they'll leave like the day after the series ends and go to San Diego, where MLB, a little bit more like we're seeing with the hockey, whereas, you know, the NBA was all on the Walt Disney World campus. Hockey used hotels in Toronto and Edmonton, but they were hotels that were kind of resort-style hotels that had some amenities, some ground space for them to spread out. So that's what they will have in San Diego, and then the other American League teams go into L.A., where they'll all be at a hotel, but at least, you know, like I said, a little bit more, you know, feeling like you're somewhere else, whereas staying at a hotel when you're at home is really weird.
San Diego.
Vacation to a new degree.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe not the one you planned on. San Diego, from what I have read, and I've only been by the ballpark a few times, haven't actually watched a game there, but kind of a pitcher's ballpark, is it not? And can that not play into the Rays' favor?
Yeah, it's interesting. And yeah, the Rays did play there last year. They have a little bit of experience. They have, you know, Hunter Renfro and Manuel Margot, who were both Padres last year. So we'll have plenty of inside information on the stadium. But it's a pitcher's ballpark against left-handed hitters, but the numbers, at least for this year, and obviously skewed in the shorter season, but the numbers for this season, it's not been a pitcher's ballpark. It's actually been a hitter's ballpark for right-handed hitters. Now, part of that might be because a couple of the right-handed hitters the Padres have, they tend to be pretty good, like Tatis and our friend Machado. But, you know, it's going to be curious, and that's like a weird thing. You have to start thinking, what's the park effect of the home park that's not your home park for your playoffs? And those playoffs are going to be played on 5 consecutive days and 7 consecutive days in the ALCS round. So that really impacts the pitching, too. There's going to be a lot of weird decisions to be made if the Rays advance.
Well, I'll tell you what. Kevin Cash deserves a lot of credit. Not only, you know, was he a manager of the year candidate a year ago, really should have been the last few years. The job that he's done now, when you go back and you think about the legacy that Joe Maddon had and coming in after him, I mean, this ball club, what it did a year ago, and then to be, you know, the best record in the American League with all the circumstances. And I think, you know, look, I don't know that anybody's going to put asterisks by anything, right, when this is all said and done. And it's true that baseball, unlike some sports, added some things, you know, like the DH in all the leagues, like starting extra innings with a runner on second base and 7-inning doubleheaders and things like that that, you know, typically you would not have. But in some ways, Mark, I think this has been – I mean, whoever wins this would have done – almost the impossible in some ways, because nothing was normal about this baseball season, and yet they're going to crown a champion.
And nothing was easy, Rick. I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and you know, and you and with the Bucks and me with the Rays, we've had the, you know, the opportunity to go to the home games and to travel to some of the road games. And, you know, it's been a little bit hard, a little bit different, but think of what it's been like for these players. I mean, you know, we've had the ability, you know, look, you were just in Denver. I assume you did not wear your mask the entire time you were in your hotel room.
No.
And these guys are, you know, they're not allowed to leave their rooms. They're in the hotel. They have to have food delivered to their door. They order their breakfast ahead of time. It comes in a box. It's left outside their door in the morning. Order their lunch and their dinner. They order the dinner from an app on their phone before they leave the ballpark, and it's waiting at their room. Not set up on the table with the white linen that they roll in from room service. It's sitting in a box or on a tray outside their room. I mean,
yeah.
If they're ordering the lobster bisque, it's not going to be the right temperature. I can tell you that right now. So, you know, and you know, away from their families. I mean, there's certain players. A couple players have their families with them, but there's been several players who told their family not to come. They just didn't want to. You know, whether they had little kids or their wife had a condition that might have made her more susceptible to it. But there were some players who just told their family, stay home. You know, I'll see you when we're done. And, you know, like I said, they've had to do with all of the rules, all the regulations, the protocols. and you know, have some go away. Sure, there was supposed to be a rule they wants to throw the ball around the infield. Every team throws the ball around the infield, so some of the rules, you know, just got taken care of. But the personal sacrifices and the challenges these guys have faced, and the vigilance, and you know, each team has a person for the Rays. It's one of the assistant athletic trainers. That's kind of the compliance officer. And, you know, he's the guy who has to walk around on the plane and tell everybody, you can't take your mask off. You can't stand there. You can't wait for the bathroom. Go back to your seat. It's like when you're on a commercial flight, those poor guys, they're charter flight. They actually have to follow the rules. But it's been tough, in all seriousness. And you're right. Brian Cashman, the Yankees general manager, said something the other day on Sirius XM radio where he said kind of what you said. Like, I thought going into this, we weren't sure how it was going to be. I can tell you right now, this might be the hardest championship to win of all the ones.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, because nothing has been normal about this year. And to be a professional athlete, look, nobody cries them a river for what their normal life is like at five-star hotels and things like this. But this has really been tough, and they've had to, you know, sacrifice what they would do with family. A lot of times you fly into cities and you might have, you know, 12 people waiting for you in New York where you're from, you know, and those are things they weren't able to do. I'll help get you out on this one. Mark, one of the players I've been fascinated with, and I haven't been able to talk to you about him, but I'll just say it, because if he plays this way, they've found something. Randy Arozarena, what can't he do?
He's been pretty impressive, Rick. And, you know, this was a guy that when they made the trade this past offseason, they traded Matt Liberatore, who was, you know, their top draft pick a couple of years ago, young pitching prospect. And the Rays don't trade pitching prospects that are good. I mean, that's they get them from other teams and make the other teams look foolish. So for the Rays to give up a very top-end, healthy young pitching prospect, you know, and Jose Martinez, you're like, okay, he's like a DH kind of guy, played for the Cardinals. You know, he'll help out a little bit, hits lefties pretty good. And then, you know, who's this other guy they got thrown into the deal? And at the time, you know, the Rays told us, like, you know, this is the guy we wanted. Martinez will help short term, but we're gambling that Arozarena is pretty good. Well, I think they may have hit another one here, Rick, because this guy runs, he hits with power, he hits for average, he's fast on the bases, he plays aggressively, he plays with a hunger that you like to see. And, you know, he had a great first week, a so-so middle week, and a pretty good third and now fourth week. But, you know, it was very impressive to see what he can do. And, you know, he gives them just another option, and they've got so many outfielders now when these guys are all healthy. But I think, you know, in a good problem to have category, he looks like he could be a very dynamic player.
No question. It's been fun to watch him and to watch the Rays. And they, you know, will begin this series against the Toronto Blue Jays. Mark, how far do you think this team goes? I mean, you've watched them. I think their playoff experience last year will help them in this situation. You wrote about this. This is not a team that was satisfied with, you know, going five games against the Houston Astros last year. They want to stay in this postseason longer this time, I'm sure.
Oh, they do. And then talking to a couple of the guys about it, you know, they were really driven by it. I mean, a couple said, you know, it hit them as soon as they walked off the field in Houston. Kevin Kiermaier said, you know, he'd be doing his offseason workouts and, you know, be like, you know what, I'm running one more sprint. I'm doing one more rep here. You know, I didn't like how last year ended. I don't want that to happen again. And you know, Willie Adames said he noticed that when they got the spring training in February, the first spring training, that, you know, it was just this attitude of, all right, that was cool, but now we're going to do it again and we're going to stick around longer. And I think that has carried them. And I think that is part of the benefit here. And, you know, this seems weird to say, because obviously the matchups get harder going forward because you're playing higher seeded teams. But just as I sit here talking to you about this today, I think if they win this first round, they're going to go pretty far.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously
yeah.
If they lose the first round, they're not. But I think, you know, you know what I'm saying, though.
I mean, exactly what you mean. I think there'll be more
the
tension.
First round,
for...
They're going to get the confidence right. They're going to get the confidence. They're going to get past the jitters. Then the next round is either the White Sox or the Yankees. And I think, you know, I just don't see that as being a big challenge. I think once they win this first round, they get on a roll, and maybe it ends up being, you know, a World Series, a Dodgers-Rays World Series, which seems to be the chalk pick here by a number of people jumping on the Rays bandwagon here at the end. And obviously a matchup with their former general manager, Andrew Friedman, and all kinds of storylines if it were to get to that.
All I know is this, Mark. I'm the guy that says we can't have nice things, but as we stand here, the Tampa Bay Lightning are up 2-0 as we're doing this podcast, trying to win their Stanley Cup final and the World Championship for the second time in the franchise history. The Rays are the number one, you know, team in the American League and starting their playoff series against the Toronto Blue Jays. And the Bucks are in first place in the NFC South. So I don't know that it's ever going to get better than right now. But all three teams seem to be doing well. It's just
pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
We'll take it.
There's a little bit of disappointment in that it's all happening in this weird year where the fans can't enjoy it. People can't congregate and get together. But on the other hand, if you had to go through 2020, you might as well go through, enjoy what you can. And having all three teams do well this year certainly puts a good spin on that.
Exactly. It's the most Tampa thing ever, Tampa Bay thing ever, 2020, to have all three and no one be able to see them. But we are enjoying them on TV. And you can enjoy Mark Topkin's coverage in the Tampa Bay Times, also on TampaBay.com throughout the playoffs, and maybe, who knows, all the way to the World Series. Thanks, Mark. We appreciate it.
All right, Rick, anytime.
I'm really looking forward to this series. I'm looking forward to this postseason for the Rays. I'm not sure how far they can go. I think he's right, though. If they get past Toronto, I think the pressure kind of comes off of them a little bit, and they might be a really tough out. If there's going to be nerves, it's going to be in this series. But if they get through it, look out. I really think they're going to become a seasoned playoff team. Hey, remember, folks, try our good friends at Mr. Empanada. You can order delicious menu items made from scratch, including soup, salads, and Cuban sandwiches online at MrEmpanada.com, or you can call any one of the 7 convenient locations in Tampa Bay, where Latin food, quality, and service meet. It's Mr. Empanada. Thanks for listening. Hope you guys get a little bit of sleep after celebrating the Lightning's Stanley Cup championship. Stanley has a tan. He's headed back to Tampa Bay. It's unbelievable.
He'll be here this afternoon.
We hope you enjoyed this. He will be here. Yeah. Got a gorgeous trophy, too, by the way. I mean, it's just there's something about seeing that trophy and watching those guys. 35 pounds, as they all say, it's as light as a feather.
Well,
so
think about those players. Tonight they'll get to sleep in their beds for the first time in over 2 months.
I mean, see their families.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah. I mean, although it was cool, there was a couple of the parents and stuff were up there. If you lived in Canada, you could actually come in. You had to quarantine for, I think, a few days and go through testing. But if you lived in the U.S., you couldn't get up there because the border's closed. So Alex Killorn's dad was there. I saw Barkley Goodrow's parents were there. I think Curtis McElhinney's parents were there. So there was a few of them that were there today in the postgame celebration. But
it was really cool, and there'll be more than a few at the boat parade and, of course, at Raymond James Stadium. Make sure you go to Ticketmaster if you want to see that and get some tickets for that as well. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great celebration. Live it up, Tampa Bay. I mean, you've got a Stanley Cup champion, Tampa Bay Lightning.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.